Hey, Mariana, thank you for coming in. You have just a wonderful background as a polymath, as an AI pioneer, successful entrepreneur, an architect of integral investing. You're award-winning, very transformational in your thinking, and very impactful on a global basis. And you got an entire career of impact. So just a remarkable background. So thank you for coming in and sharing your insights with our audience.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Stephen. It takes one to see one, so I can only give back the assessment that you had on me. So it's a great honor to be on your program.
So, Mariana, you've got this remarkable professional and personal life, and it's continuing all of these major contributions you're making, and it's full of insight and full of experiences and just this remarkable impact. But what were the defining moments early in your life that created this wonderful person you are today? I mean, three inflection points. Let's say it could have been when you were 3 or 5. It could have been when you're older, inside the family, outside the family. It could have been mentors you've had or educational career experiences. What are those? And maybe it's more than 3, maybe it's 4 or 5, but from a time standpoint, well, for you, it'd be like probably 100 because you do so much and you got so many things you do. But maybe the top 3 or 4 defining moments that were really inflection points to make you who you are today.
Well, thank you. Well, I think the most important thing is I was born and raised in communist Romania as the daughter of a German mother and a Romanian father. And so that cultural mixture actually had a huge impact on me, particularly because people are expecting more of their own. And so I was not. I was a mixture of something. And so they gave me a hard time, but there were quite a few teachers, and we're always standing on someone else's shoulders. We're never alone in what we do. So I had a wonderful, wonderful math teacher who helped me build self-confidence, and she supported me in my talent. I just loved math, and that was a wonderful way to persevere and to get out of poverty. At least that was the party line that my parents taught me. So we were very poor. I went to school very often without food. The nutrition was terrible. We were really, really, really poor. But having that opening, in school, and also the party line of a socialist system, a communist system, basically, that says everyone is equal, and if you only work hard enough, then you can get out of poverty. I believed in that, and that helped me. Gain self-confidence. Eventually, my parents didn't tell me about what was true in reality going on in the background, because otherwise I would have spoken up and I would have made a lot of enemies and ended up not in a good place. But eventually, they saw that there was no way how we could thrive and survive in communist Romania. And based on my mother's heritage, whose family was basically in Germany, we were able to leave Romania. Ceausescu sold, his German citizens to Germany, for instance, that paid per capita a certain amount of money. And so at age 16, my parents and I left and immigrated to Germany, where, that was the other extraordinary next step in my life, where I ended up studying computer science at the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology. And I never really liked programming in Pascal. That was the language that we were taught. But in 2003, there was the International Joint Conference on Artificial Intelligence that took place in Karlsruhe, and I got in touch with artificial intelligence 41 years ago, which of course introduced me to object-oriented programming, rule-based development of rule-based systems, and I saw, oh my God, there is actually a way of doing computer science, that supports human thinking rather than building your thinking in a weird way in programming. And so I followed that route, eventually was sent by the German government to an exchange program to Stanford University, that yet another it changed my life entirely. And so that's how I ended up in Silicon Valley doing artificial intelligence applied in chip design. It was at the back then we spoke about expert systems as one part of artificial intelligence, knowledge-based systems, which I applied in very large-scale integrated circuits. And so, and then I followed a career in high tech and top executive at Oracle Corporation, Hewlett-Packard, that was actually previously called, Digital Equipment Corporation, that was sold to Hewlett-Packard eventually. And so these were the major steps. But another important lever or a level of development that had an influence on me was in the mid 90s. My husband and I, who followed me at Stanford, to Stanford, we discovered we saw Mosaic, the first internet browser. And we knew the internet, and we knew that a new era was starting, the exponential growth of everything. And after a failed attempt in Silicon Valley to start up a company that would help build internet presence and web-developed applications and so on in the Valley, because our partners back then didn't understand what the hell we were talking about. It was at the same time when Elon Musk was in the Valley building his own new startups. We came then to Germany and wanted to help European companies get onto the internet, only to find out that people didn't know either what is the internet? This is what the telecommunication does. And so what is the internet and what is exponential growth and so on and so on. So we found out that people in order to get an internet presence, they needed to get internet access. And so while I continued to do technology transfer from Silicon Valley to Europe and built a company in Romania, where I came from, because in Germany there weren't any people who could spell Java or object-oriented programming. So I went to Romania, got a few smart students, sent them to Silicon Valley, educated them, and helped them learn how to build application servers. You work with application servers to build internet-based applications. And my husband at the same time started his own company, helping people get onto the internet. And that ended up being the first internet service provider nationwide in Germany. And so all of a sudden we had an IPO. It was the first internet stock that went public on the German stock exchange. And all of a sudden, so I was out of poverty, whatever that was, only to realize the schizophrenia in our world. On one hand, we had this IPO and internet and all this abundance around it. On the other hand, there were my parents, who were very simple people, but with a heart of gold, and who were from the little money that they earned. They went to Romania and other places in Europe and gave others who had less. And so there was, on one hand, my parents with their philanthropy. Philanthropist means lover of people. And on the other hand, the IPO and the entire NASDAQ and internet abundance. And so we thought that something was really wrong in this inequal world, and it was some kind of a schizophrenia that we wanted to address. And that changed, of course, yet my entire journey, because I decided to find a way to get rid of that schizophrenia, particularly in the face of the climate. I grew up with the Club of Rome, learning about limits to growth and so on, and climate back then even, that we're going to end up where we are today. Those who had ears to hear could hear it. And so we looked for ways to come up with a model that would enable the integration between, excuse me, for-profit only and NGOs, the thinking that I think is at the core of the inequality on our planet today. So a short question and a long answer to it. Thank you for asking it.
So what I'm hearing is, you grow up under challenging circumstances, and that helped shape your life as well. And then you have this opportunity to be discovered that you have tremendous mathematical skills, and you're brilliant, and you're a polymath, and that led to education at Kit, and also to get masters in artificial intelligence. You saw this aspect of, hey, I can do something that's really even further transformational, and getting to AI and going to Stanford and being involved with all of these great companies, so you can see the possibilities, right? And I remember when DEC existed, by the way, and they were the largest mini computer company in the world, right? And they were taking market share away from IBM. So I understand that journey, and you're part of all of that. And even designing semiconductors and things like that, which is again transformational. And in fact, John Hennessy, who's the chair of Alphabet, that's how his claim to fame, right? And in essence, early, or even Jensen Huang now with his 2+ trillion in NVIDIA. It's really, but you have a background in that, and you understood the power of entrepreneurship, and then you take this to Europe. And you found these companies, and then you have this marvelous exit, and then you have abundance, but you realize, because of what your family was doing on the philanthropy side, you realize there's got to be a way I can combine these two, right? And that is what has shaped to where you are today. So that's a remarkable journey, though, throughout that entire space. But you also got a PhD in psychology. So could you describe why you got a PhD in psychology? Because all of your undergrad degrees, or your degrees at the time, were in tech, right? So.
Yes, well, I have a master's degree in computer science and artificial intelligence. And when we came across this schizophrenia that I call schizophrenia, for-profit, not-for-profit, which is at the core of our economics, the way the global economy and individual national economy work is the separation between the two. So on one hand, you have the maximization of profits in the financial industry, and on the other hand, the not-for-profit sector, who is trying to balance it out. And so during the day, you go to work and make a ton of money, including, Wall Street and so on. And in the evening and the weekend, you go to fundraisers and donate to alleviate some of that inequality. So I was so interested in finding a way to really integrate that and maybe provide a means to increase the abundance at larger scale. And also some form of redistribution, because noblesse oblige, as we say in French. And so that was the reason why I was actually introduced to Ken Wilber's integral theory by an amazing teacher of mine, whom I have been following and studying with and going on vacation with, named Tony Robbins, the very famous motivational speaker. And he mentioned, I will never forget that. We were traveling around the world. It was back then with Tony Robbins and a handful of friends. We were sleeping in some Bedouin tents out, in the desert, in the Sahara Desert outside of Morocco, when during an evening presentation, he introduced us to Ken Wilber's integral model and about, evolution of consciousness and evolution of societies and evolution of cultures. And I thought, wow, that makes a lot of sense. So we move from an egocentric mindset, like where the world is all about me, and we all know who have children or have been children, when you're small, it's all about me and maximizing that ego. But in a healthy family, in a healthy societal environment, we graduate to what we call the ethnocentric. We want to become part of the tribe, part of the group, and want to belong, like in the, when we're 16 years old. And but then later, when we go to university and earn a little money, then we see that, wow, we don't live alone. We don't even live in a single village or in one nation. We live in the world. And particularly today, through technological advancement, we live in a global society where everything takes place at the global scale. And that's what the Club of Rome participated in my education, in by bringing this awareness that in my mind that the air doesn't stop at the border between France and Germany, or Canada and the United States. I mean, we all breathe the same air. We all share this one little beautiful planet that is unique thus far in the universe. And so I then wanted to study more. I wanted to know what is this, who is this guy, Ken Wilber, who has come up with this, this amazing philosophical understanding, meta theory of, where we're from and where are we going and what is the bigger context in which we operate. And so that's why that was the more I wanted to meet Ken, this amazing person, Ken Wilber. And I decided to get a PhD in philosophy and psychology, and this is why what I ended up doing. And that became then the foundation of integral investing, because it's called integral theory. And this is the report to the Club of Rome and the World Academy of Art and Sciences that I wrote, which is at the foundation of how we invest today, how I invest, how I build companies today, because resources are always limited. And if you really want to have an impact to address the grand global challenges, which is what we're in the middle of right now, then we need to make sure that we invest in the people with a global mindset, with a world-centric mindset. They get the resources necessary in order to make the dream come true. And of course, as a technology person, I believe that not I believe, I know that technology is key to making the world a better place because it creates the abundance and it helps everybody at the bottom of the pyramid.
I mean,
So this is why I got my PhD in psychology, because I needed to stand on two feet. On one side, the technological aspect, the computer science aspect, the artificial intelligence, and on the other, the interior aspect. Who are we as human beings? Because we're here on for a limited, short amount of time, and how can we contribute and give back to the world?
I can see that you wanted to integrate the human touch, the human side, right? The emotional side, the emotional quotient side, together with the kind of the metrics-driven, mathematically-driven, algorithm-driven side, which is in the artificial intelligence and the degrees that you have earlier. But then that lends to the foundation you had with your parents, right? Where the philanthropic side, and but how can we do it on a global basis? And as you mentioned, you saw some early signs even many years ago with the Club of Rome, right? Because they look at things in a very holistic way, and it's a very it goes beyond multidisciplinary and multi-stakeholder to transdisciplinary, right? So and you encompass all of that as well. And then that got into your integral investing, right? You're looking at things from a very holistic sense, and that would combine indigenous thinking to cultural thinking to ancestral thinking to technology as well, and integrating all of these different aspects and coming together to be more efficient. So, I mean, just kind of remarkable. And then you talk about consciousness. So let's get into some of those aspects, and then I'll go back to your integral investing and your philosophies there. We're at this remarkable transition occurring, right? You see things like quantum biology and this sort of realization there's something happening in biology that transcends classical thinking or even a recognition because of the proliferation of this thinking of quantum biology even to consciousness, and that transcends classical thinking. And then you have the influx of all of these amazing technologies, right? Like semiconductor technologies were really, really exploding in their diversity and design, and you have a base in there. AI machine learning, of course, is just exploding again. And in fact, in Canada, our prime minister just announced a $2 billion investment in the Canadian AI infrastructure and startups. And then you also have quantum computing, analog computing, and all the manifestations of that in exascale computing, biomedical innovation. I mean, there's just all of this convergence happening. So where do you see some of these elements? Do you think, for example, quantum computing is real? I mean, I think most people think it's real, but do you think it's real? And we're going to see some outcomes on the narrow side, and then maybe on the broader side. And then I'll address AI machine learning and some of the things that I just mentioned. I mean, where do you see quantum computing?
I am an investor in quantum algorithms and fusion reactors, and because the future, everyone talks about AI these days, of course. But artificial intelligence didn't fall out of the sky last year, as we all know, and it's been around for a long time. But the future is not artificial intelligence. The future is actually quantum technologies combined. We're using artificial intelligence to dig deeper into addressing humanity's grand global challenges and helping develop technologies that will help us address the grand global challenges, which for me is the biggest challenge we have is climate change. And it takes a different level. You mentioned consciousness, of consciousness that goes beyond the egocentric, ethnocentric, even world-centric toward a universal centric level of consciousness. But that's and so I believe, and this is of course needs to be determined right now. Quantum computers do not exist yet, but we're very believe that they will be coming online and within the next 10 years or 15 years, so not 40 as was true for so long. And but in the meantime, there is another there are quantum algorithms, quantum-based algorithms that very, very smart people, much smarter than I am, people are developing to build the gap between today's traditional computers and quantum computers. And using the technology to address, new security, to develop new security algorithms, to address new communication algorithms, and that could work today and could show today that solutions are possible, using quantum thinking, quantum algorithms, and build, bridge the gap until the quantum computers are available. One of the investments that we made is KIPU Quantum, KIPU Quantum in Berlin. Some extraordinary people who are, all PhDs developing these algorithms, and many, many companies who are investing heavily in this. So yes, that is quantum safety. Quantum security is a big issue right now, as we all know. As when we live at the time when people are collecting our data and secure data from banks and governments and so on in order to be able to decode it by the time quantum computers are available. So the safety aspect, the security aspect can be addressed today with such algorithms. And this is a huge, huge development that ought to occur, and which we're supporting with our investments and publishing and speaking around it, because there is a lot of hope. No matter how split and polarized our societies are today, there are some very smart people who are doing everything they can in order to not to prevent us from doing bad things to ourselves. So yeah, quantum technology, biotechnology, all of these nanotechnology, these are amazing developments, and in which we're investing. And this is gives me a lot of hope. And now on the consciousness aspect, I can only bring mention my hero, Donald Hoffman, who is a professor at Irvine University, who is at the forefront of developing new models to show that consciousness is fundamental. And not space and time. And he bases, of course, his developments on the most advanced discoveries by Nima Arkani-Hamed and others, who physicists from Princeton and other major universities who have discovered systems beyond space and time, beyond the relativity theory and the space and time notion that we currently have of the universe. But this is way far out, so maybe we would like to talk about this in more detail at a later point in time.
So I'll go back to quantum. I mean, it's fascinating. You're already investing in quantum-inspired algorithms. As you mentioned, it's a bridge between making use of this new kind of thinking while the hardware is continually evolving. And, Quantinuum is working on three versions of their quantum computer, and each one a trillion times faster than the other one, but they're working on all three simultaneously. They've released the H1 version. The H2 is new, and they're also working on the H3. But they're really working on all three. And just maybe about 2 weeks ago, they made an announcement with Microsoft that they were able to create logical qubits that were 800 times more error-free than anything existed before. And what they're suggesting is that they can now scale this. So they basically have, they think, a fairly stable qubit, and they did four of them, and they believe they can scale this. So this gets to an earlier, probably universal quantum computer. And then Microsoft released Microsoft Quantum Elements, where they solved the problem using this concept of inspired, plus some of the early work in quantum hardware, and together with supercomputing, and they developed the new batteries. So I think it's going to be earlier, even in the practical application. They'll be narrow, or this n-quantum Monte Carlo simulation technology, which is quantum inspired, which has already been released, right? And then has practical applications in business and also in physics and so on. So I think, I mean, and you're investing, which is rare. It's rare for individuals to be investing. Normally, it's like countries or things like that, but you're personally investing in these areas. So I think that's just remarkable. And you see the insight. You have the insight to take these bets, because you realize the implications it's going to have on climate. You talked about your work and your interest in consciousness, and I'll get back to that later, depending on how much time we have. So I want to look at semiconductors, because you have a background on semiconductors, and you see Philip Wong with he's already producing carbon nanotube based semiconductors, which can be more efficient, lower energy. There's working on 3D scaling as well. Architectures, resistive RAM, they actually have produced the chips. They're just trying to get the cost down, where again, maybe you can get 1,000 times more performance increase, and maybe 1,000 times less power more efficiencies. But because you have this background in semiconductors, where do you see that going? And you saw Blackwell being announced by Jensen Huang, which is what, 200 plus billion transistors and the kind of system architecture that they've created, and it just kind of amazing. And in fact, the rate of progress is like double exponential in a way. It's greater than what was thought to be. So because you have this background in semiconductors, what are your What's your view on where that's going in a few years? And do you think we'll be able to bring the increase the compute and bring down the energy requirements in a sort of a sophisticated way, which will make a difference? Maybe semiconductors on the edge, where they're integrating AI into the semiconductors, making them more tuned in that way. You know, what are your views of where that is going?
Well, that's a hard call. You basically said it. Going 3D is the next version. Then there is another black semiconductor company, that actually didn't want to take us to invest. So they got too much money, and they didn't want to take a small investor like us and let them join us. But we got invested through the advisor. I'm on the advisory board of Onsite Ventures in it's a small fund in Innsbruck, Austria, that was started by Hermann Hauser, the developer of ARM computers. He was one of the original, and so so it's an exciting time to look at it. And so black semiconductors are working exactly on going 3D, but also building new ways to get the communication going at the same level. So it's that's something to observe. Black semi I think it's black semiconductors, yes, in 3D. And of course, as you said, I see it in Switzerland. Actually, there are quite a few extremely smart people from the ETH Zurich who are also using artificial intelligence to develop new semiconductor technologies, and also embed some sort of artificial intelligence or software into the technology itself. So yeah, it's an exciting field to observe and to be involved with. But at the same time, there are so many extraordinary developments. You mentioned biotechnology, quantum technology, semiconductors, and also verticals in within the area of healthcare. At my age, I'm interested, of course, more and more in healthcare and how that is being developed further. I'm speechless. We don't even have enough time to look at the deals that we're getting along those lines. And robots, artificial intelligence driven robots in healthcare, and which is of course an extremely important aspect, particularly when it comes to climate change. I think and education is another extremely important because people are going to as we all know, in the West, the population is reducing, and so people are living much longer. So the intention is to keep us longer productive and healthy. So that's a big one of the investors, and also co-advisory board members is the founder of BioNTech, which of course is life sciences, and this is why this is extremely interesting for me as well, in addition to semiconductors and quantum technology.
Okay, so let's get more into biomedical innovation, right? Because that's an interest of yours, and it's clear, and digital health, and it's transforming this whole aspect of longevity. So you're following, David Sinclair's work at Harvard, or you
Course. Aging is a disease. That's his quote. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
and then there's other innovations where novel sort of kind of techniques where very precision personalized medicine. What are your views on biomedical innovation in maybe in wearables and biomedical innovation, novel ways of doing biomedical innovation, the longevity side? Are there other areas on the longevity side that you're looking at or you're interested in, and just overall kind of like population health that are of interest?
And it's extremely important to see what is at the foundation of integral investing, which is our flagship strategy. And so the top priorities, and this is what I think we need to focus on for the next 10 to 15 years, is what we do with respect to climate change and how do we help transform the major industries, from energy to transportation to food to healthcare, for the large scale of a population on the planet while reducing the CO2 emission. And so, and that in that ties in, food production, energy production, and how transportation is being transformed. So this is at the core now to of how we look at the world, and that's the lens through which we, that helps us decide in which investments do we invest in, which in we don't. And so coming back to what you said. In terms of healthcare, health in terms of the human healthcare, but also health of the planet, there's this entire field of cellular. How do we? How do you? There's an investment that we did in where we help using. Actually, explain that. So when it comes to looking at the client at the keeping agricultural healthy and the toxicity associated with agriculture development, then there's a lot of we had all these discussions about what we put in onto our food and what gets into our food, and we know how our oceans are polluted and the food is polluted. And so there is this investment that we did where these brilliant scientists came out with a new technology where they use cells in order to assess, instead of using testing toxicology on rats, they use cells. And which is, of course, an extraordinary development. We poor rats, we're saving, a few rats. So it's, and it has a huge impact. So that's one particular aspect that has both implications for human health, but also agriculture development and food production. Because the population on of the planet will grow up until 9 to maybe 10 billion. And we all know the CO2 emissions that come from food production is extremely high, particularly meat production. And so if we could, invest more into alternative meat production rather than cows, artificial meat and cellular agriculture, the better for all of us. So the goal is, and if you look at the technology that is currently available, in terms of how can we reduce the CO2 emission from the major industries, energy production. Actually, I have the numbers here. So we could reduce the CO2 emissions, 90% of the CO2 emissions, by 2035, through three industries alone. 45% from energy production, 14% from transportation, and 30% from food production. It's 90%. So, and the technology is all available today. You don't have to, you just need to have the political will and the capital that is needed in order to address these, to make it happen. And of course, going net zero is not enough. We need to do the carbon sequestration. We need to reduce the CO2 that has already been in the atmosphere because the planet is not waiting for us to put our act together. So this is, as much as I like other industries and other things, this is the main strategic point for us as to where our capital, our support goes. It's the most important aspect. And of course, we can go into the detail. The important thing to realize is that those industries, like energy, transportation, food, just to mention three, they are currently totally being disrupted, and we see that, so no old energy production will be in place in the same way that has been before. We can all go to renewables, and the same in the transportation. And transportation transformation doesn't occur by replacing your internal combustion car with an electric car or battery driven. No. It's the convergence of battery driven cars, fleet development, and then reducing the cars that are currently in the market. People, what they want is transport as a service. They don't, I mean, at least I can speak for myself. It's just like with horses. We can still ride horses, but we don't use them as a means for transportation. And that's the same what's happening to the current way we transportation occurs. So we don't want to have this our streets being a huge parking lot. We can replace them with autonomous driving, with fleets, with battery-driven cars, and reduction in CO2 emissions. So I'm sorry if I didn't respond your the question that you are going by, but I think this is the most important thing that I would like to stress at this point in time. We need to do everything and anything we can to address the climate change and work aligned, be aligned in whatever we do in terms of economies, of creating abundance for everyone and so on, be aligned with what the planet wants, because there are nine planetary boundaries it's the operating system of the planet in which the planet can operate safely for us and help us thrive. And six of them have been broken. And so we need to go back. Otherwise, the planet won't be able to sustain life. And we see that every day. I mean, we're now in April, and in the weather, is just like in May. Everything is blooming, and that's not normal.
Yeah, and in fact, it's over 12 months now. It's heading to a year and a half of over 1.5 degrees centigrade, and it's rising, right? So, and as you mentioned, we've hit so many different tipping points. Whether it's unlocked methane in the Arctic is defrosting, basically, right? I mean, there's just all of these elements, and then you talk about food and disrupting that space. I mean, we can grow food and bioreactors. We don't have to have animals, right? And on energy, as you mentioned, thinking of transportation differently, where we used to think everybody has to have their own vehicle. You don't have to have your own vehicle. And the existing vehicles that are out there, we could use other means of driving the energy sources for those. And individual vehicles are underused. And so that's what you're saying. It becomes a service. It becomes shared, right? And also that's why you're investing in fusion, because you realize that we have to have other kinds of energy beyond also renewables, and renewables are not enough, right, to meet the gap. So I can see all of these areas that are converging, and then of course there's health, planetary health. And I love the idea that there are these nine boundaries, and we've exceeded six of them. And do you have a book that people can, or a report that you can, people, I can point my audience to that, or maybe it's in your profile that is in the that's
That's
shared.
the book.
Okay,
That
great. Okay.
that's Integral Investing. It's the first chapter is on the statistics, why we have developed this strategy for investing, at least for the next 10 to 15 years. After that, once the planet goes back toward health, we could continue to pick and choose what we like to invest in or focus on. But for the time being, we need all hands on deck, need to get to be addressing the climate issues that we have, and all the reverberations, everything that is connected to the impact of changing climate. And so that's exactly, and there are, this is what at the foundation of our strategy. And in chapter one is exactly that, what can be done, and transformation is feasible, as I just mentioned, with respect to the three industries, and the technology that is already, it's available. We just need to do it, and join forces, and it has to be a bottom up and a top down approach. Very often, as we see right now, top down, there's all this polarization, and the problem is that the technology that we currently have is the development of the collective intelligence on the internet over since the onset of human culture that is now available globally for all of us. But when it comes to the usage and the application, the polarization of the society is just like individual groups and people who are hijacking, who could never have developed the technology that we have right now, but they're hijacking the cultural mindset of people. And this is when we're talking from a CEO, I'm looking for, I'm looking into companies and speaking to CEOs all the time. People are totally confused because on one hand, humanity has never been richer than ever before in terms of the technology and the abundance that's been created and the health and the reduction of child mortality and so on. But at the same time, we're in the biggest culture war ever right now. And so the question is, how can we close the gap? And how can I do as a CEO, as an investor, as an entrepreneur, how can I close that gap? What is that? What is the biggest leverage point that I could use? And that's basically, closing, culture. I think it was Peter Drucker, wasn't he, who said culture eats strategy for breakfast. And so if we really want to support ourselves and the planet and go, go back to freedom and continue the abundance, we need to close the cultural gap and pick people up where they are at and help everyone participate in the abundance that technology is providing us. And so it happens at the individual level, but most of all at the cultural level. How can we unify people? How can we help people participate at their own level of consciousness? They don't even have to think at the global scale. This is the responsibility of the leaders and the CEOs and people who have the interest. But help people participate in this and unify so that they don't see or feel that they're left behind. And this is what integral investing does in terms of the philosophy. And this is what we're doing with our own approach. And it sounds big, it is big, but we can do it. I mean, we're talking here about consciousness. And this is exactly what it takes. Because, particularly when it comes with AI, in context with AI, people talk about, AI is dangerous and AI could be this and that and the other. Well, intelligence is not one. You mentioned it before. Intelligence is cognitive intelligence, which is at the foundation of our artificial intelligence systems right now. It's cognitive. It's all knowledge, that you can find in books and online and so on. But you also mentioned emotional intelligence, which we need to teach our artificial intelligence systems to support us, but also psycho-spiritual. So intelligence is a coalesces into many, many different kinds of intelligences, cognitive, emotional, spiritual, and psychological, and so on. And it is in this unity that we can all grow together, that we can bring cultures, whether it is the culture in one corporation, in a startup, or globally, we need to work together. Otherwise, well, the abundance won't continue because we're fighting the wrong wars.
Yeah, I mean, definitely all of the paths we're on are there to solve all of these major issues, right? So, and a key or hub to this is your book, Integral Investing, which is available.
It's been available for quite some time. Since 2020, was written as a report to the Club of Rome and the World Academy of Art and Sciences. The reason for that is because in the Club of Rome, people were so busy with the climate, they were basically anti-technology, saying, "Well, all these resources that we're wasting for technology, and we don't need technology." And so I saw the need to explain people that we cannot address the climate issues and go back to a safe operating system for the planet. Clean, I mean, how do you want to plant more trees? How do you want to water them without drones? How do you repopulate the oceans with the flora and fauna without robots? How do you want to do the CO2 go back to get to go to net zero without technology, carbon sequestration and so on? And that's why I wrote the book and without money. Money and entrepreneurship and innovation and creativity. We need all of us, not just one or another. We need all of us. Every single one of us on this planet is needed, to keep democracy at work, to keep democracy flourishing, to keep technology help, to support us, to get AI to help us become better at what we do and not. Yes, there will be replacements, of course, but this is what technology has always done. It made our lives much easier. So anyway, so I don't want to bore you with those details, but this is why I wrote the book. I wanted to bring into people's understanding, this holistic need for everything and technology, money, capital, entrepreneurship, to address the grand global challenges, climate change being the foremost, important one.
Yeah, I mean, you created a holistic plan that integrates all of these different elements into this book, Integral Investing. That is a roadmap and a North Star for saving the planet and saving all of us, and not just humans, but all life as well, right? So, and it's quite amazing. And 3.5% of any community can create systemic change or be a catalyst, a catalytic for movement. And that could start in your family. So 3.5% within a family, it could be within your larger community, it could be in a city, it could be in your classroom. It doesn't have to be, oh my God, oh heck, we have to get the whole world. You start at these little microcosms, and those microcosms collectively create the movement that will change the world. Unfortunately, we run out of time. I realize we could probably spend half a day just mining all the work you're doing. It's just incredible. So I only have time for one more question. And this question is, what are your recommendations to the audience? That, and you've been given lots of recommendations, but what's your final recommendation to the audience?
Well, I think that the most important one is for us to see that we are standing on each other's shoulders, and the diversity and the variety of flora and fauna on the planet is something that is absolutely needed for every single one of us, be it above water, underwater, in every ecosystem around the planet. So honoring that and opening our hearts and our minds to one another is key. I think it's the most important component of winning the current challenges that we have, and the first foremost one being, the climate and climate change. And I think because I'm worried by the cultural wars, I think this is. It's the most important to for all of us to see that we live in a global world, that every single information is instantaneous, that we need to educate ourselves and use the AIs, ChatGPT, and all of those to educate yourself on the important issues and educate yourself on how you can reach out to the next person. And be curious about what they do and how we can join forces and find groups where we can engage with one another to support each other and address those issues. Go and ask questions rather than waste your time online and fight and look into yourself and find your ask yourself what makes you happy inside in your heart and act accordingly. Because if you're conscious of how you live your life, whether you're happy or angry, you can change it. And this is the call to everyone, is the individual transformation that eventually leads to reaching out to other people. And one thing that is extremely important is there is plenty of money to go around and help you implement your make your dream come true. Just go out, be curious, and ask questions and ask for what you need. Don't think that someone else is, if 30 people tell you, like Disney, he asked 32 banks before he found one, the first one who was willing to fund his idea, a crazy idea at the time. So 30 times back then, imagine today we could be longer, but never, never, never give up. Never give up hope. Never give up. You're not alone. And we can join forces. We must join forces. There is enough capital to go around. There is so much creativity, so much innovation. There's so much information that can help us address, even no matter what you care about, whether it is the AI alignment problem with the values of humanity or the development of the next quantum computer. It doesn't really matter. You can always find the groups, to join forces to feel good, to feel happy about yourself, because how you are on the inside, that reflects on the outside. And what I see on the outside right now at times is not good. So we can change that. And this is the most important call that I have for people. And particularly I'd like the CEOs to really step in and build the cultures within their companies that of unity and collaboration, of global thinking and empowerment, and use the technology to do so.
I mean, Mariana, I mean, that's a very impassioned call for action. And you are a polymath. You're an AI pioneer. You're a very successful serial entrepreneur. You're architect of integral investing. I mean, you're an award. You work on exponential growing technology to address humanity's threats. And we talked about many of them. And you're active in this. You're working with the implementation of the UN SDGs within the planetary boundaries. You're a prominent alumni of all of these educational institutions that you're part of. You're strategic advisor for governments, the EU, Germany, Dutch, US, State Department, UNCTAD. You do empowering keynotes, and I can see the passion for TEDx, Stanford, Oxford, INSEAD, frequent TV guest, and a renowned author. And you talked about this report to the Club of Rome and the World Academy of Arts and Science, and it's integral investing from profit to prosperity. So, and everybody, and it's been out there for some time. So people have to embrace it because you've created a roadmap and a template, and you're a recipient of all of these awards. It's just the Golden Angelina Award. I mean, this latest one, a member of the European Angels Task Force in January, Best European Early Stage Investor Award. I mean, it just the list goes on. And then all of the other kind of impacts that you're having, you're doing the work and others have to follow. And you're the North Star for the world to follow. So thank you for coming in and sharing so much with our audience.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be here. And I'm deeply honored to be your friend and look forward to more. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.